At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Travon Philby with Clint and Danny reading in the wizard. The wizard. Why is he a wizard?
Because he looks like a lizard.
Who?
Steve, he's so ugly. Fellas, Busso has just been completed. Busso Ironman, the big race to sort of tail end the season for everyone. It's a real interesting one because people are coming into it tired at the end of the year or they're on fire. It's a really hard one to predict. We were all over there. Steve was racing. From your perspective, Steve, welcome. And how did you find it, mate?
I find it a little bit frustrating because I didn't really use any tactics. I just got frustrated at the bike group, basically just no one coming forward to pull a turn. And then it just kind of fired me up enough to follow every move that Dan Backergaard made once he did start making them around 60K. So he just kind of sat at the back, very tactical. And then I just was so sick of sharing the load with Jack Szczynski. Apo came through, but no one else, not a single person in that 8-man group, despite my swear words and yelling and waving through. But anyway, I just ended up just trying to pretend to fix my shoe because I was like, I'm going to force someone to come to the front now, and I'm going to go to the back and maybe talk with Daniel. And at that point, Daniel made a huge move, and it just seemed like a cycling race from then on. Everyone eventually got dropped besides Apo. He had a crash. So when I was on the run and had kind of done my race thinking maybe the run won't happen with this foot injury I've got, turned out a bit like that. So I'm happy not having tactics on the bike and just going for it because it would have ended up pretty average on the run anyway. But it made me kind of less angry and just appreciative that I did get to finish and come fourth because poor Apo came all that way. Arguably had a much better training block than me, was going to do well and had that crash. So that's kind of sums up my race in a small sentence.
It's not arguable. He definitely had a better prep than you.
I don't know.
but it's always arguable how anyone would go. But yeah, he'd done an awesome prep and I really feel for him. He was an age grouper, just jammed on the brakes when they had a slight mechanical on the course, and Apo went straight up the back of them at like 50K an hour and just bike was pretty beat up. We don't know if anything's serious yet. He's actually gotten worse since the race with his hip. So just gutting. I think it's very hard if you haven't been in it, but it's 12 weeks of work for literally little to no paycheck sometimes, if not more. And he'd put in a really solid block. And as I said on the podcast last time, it's very rare to have a prep without sick kids and things go wrong. And he had one of those unusual preps. So it was super, super disappointing. I think that given everything you'd been through, I still think fourth place was just partly attributed to just your mental toughness as well. Like you just know how to suffer. And the way you were surging on the bike and even looking through the bike data, I'm like, oh man, this could be a 3.5-hour marathon. And then, you know, you were the one closing the gaps. You're the ones making the moves. And yeah, we might try a different tactic next race. But
yeah.
So on that, Steve, if you had your time over, and we'll preface this with both Reedy and I standing on the sidelines saying, don't be on the bloody front the whole time. what would you change? Would you change anything about the way you attacked that bike ride?
Yeah, yes, but it's a tough one because You either sit on the front and drag eight blokes along the whole race because they will keep up if I just push my Ironman power, and then potentially they'll outrun you and I don't even come fourth. Or you go with those moves, but only to a certain point, and then you ride your race power. So I don't know. If I had my time again, I'd probably try not going with Backyard that first time he went and just let him be an mate because he is so strong. And we did work together eventually, which was really good. But that was once we got rid of a few more people. I think he needed in his head to get rid of passengers. And so he had a good tactic for that. But I just raced like an idiot. And so it's given me love for the sport finally since Europe. And, you know, I've got fire in my belly finally to go and get it right, because once you screw something up like this, you want to do it again. So I'll go and do, I reckon, at this point, New Zealand. And it's annoying. I've got my break now, but I finally actually want to do some training. But yeah, I did say to one of the Danish blokes, don't know his name, won't look it up because I'll get too angry. It was just him left. And if you're covered, it's 130K in. If you've covered all of Daniel's moves, like myself, and you're the only one left out of eight, clearly you could have come to the front at least once. So I slammed on the brakes at that point, got level with him, and I said, pull an effing turn. Where's your pride? You're racing with no dignity, you C word. And I was pretty, fired up. And then after the race, he just smiled at me. Yeah. And just did nothing still. I'm like, I wish I could race like this, but I just can't bring myself to. So I'll just, yes, it's a very long answer, but I reckon I would let, Daniel is stronger than me on the bike. I would look around and go, who's stronger than me? If they're pushing over my Ironman power, which I think's actually going to get me a good time overall, I've got confidence in that now, then I'll just let people go and I'll do my own thing because I'll run fast off my Ironman power.
Well, the guy that you verbally abused on course ran a 2:58, mate, so he wasn't something that you had to worry about.
I think the hard people for people understand too, on a flat, fast course like that, you're not just talking like 10 or 15 watts advantage sitting legally behind other riders. You're talking 30 to 50 watts, especially the higher the speed, the bigger the advantage. And so you guys were in certain directions. You're going 55K an hour. The guy on the front's pushing 50, 60 watts more. And an easy solution to that is let's extend that draft zone.
yeah.
But we could bang our heads on the wall for that one for a while. But it's very hard in the age group race to extend it because of the numbers. But I still think in the pro race, that's a really good option because, Steve, you're going to just have to, if you're going to have to join the game a little bit and be a bit more tactical. But yeah. But I do love that you race with pride and dignity. And I think we've seen I think this was a really good demonstration of where your cycling has got to. Cause I agree with you. I think Daniel is so strong and to be able to hold him, you know, to a really good time is impressive. So good on you. And speaking of Daniel, he's coming on hopefully. So we'll get to quiz him a bit more about the race and chat about a few other things. The whole weekend in general, Clint, I actually hadn't been to Busso for a while and I was impressed. The last time I raced it, I felt like it had sort of, the vibe had dropped off a bit, but I still don't think quite up there for me as like Port Macquarie is, but it is a pretty amazing atmosphere. It was a great weekend. And first of all, I also want to just say big shout out to the COA guys who put on a lot of extra little events around the weekend. And it was really fun that they included us, especially as I wouldn't call us a rival coaching company. We do quite different, like it's a bit different and there's plenty of athletes for everyone, but it was fun to be a part of it. The beer mile, the drinks afterwards, all that sort of thing. So cheers to those guys.
The performance of the national anthem by a paid performer at said beer mile was one of the highlights of the weekend. No, it was... It was a very good event, like the whole weekend. So yeah, there was a good vibe there, Reedy. It was a question I got asked this week. Someone slid into my DMs and said, righto, hypothetical, rank the three races top to bottom. And I was like, well, that's a really tough one because that's Port, Cairns and Busselton. They all provide something different and they're all really good races. But yeah, it was a really good vibe. Conditions seemed pretty good on the bike. Like, it was really windy on the run. I wouldn't necessarily say it was like conditions for fast running. But yeah, overall a really good, really enjoyable weekend for all.
And let's just talk about the pro race in general. Let's start with the women's race. Clint, your thoughts? I mean, Lisa Norden was astonishing with her bike ride, and I saw the guys she was riding with, and I know some of their power, and they weren't slacking on the bike. So to ride, I think it's the fastest 180K time trial in Ironman for women to date, so like a world record in that regard, 4 hours, 20 minutes. Probably did pay for it a little bit on the run, but toughed it out for, I've lost the results, so I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's 3:10.
Yeah, it was a 3:11.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was a good race. I do think that, yet again, it'd be good because those guys, yeah, we see their power numbers, and they were very complimentary of Lisa, said that she came through them and they were like, wow, it's incredibly demoralizing to be sitting legally with a female on the course because they were all riding so well as a group at that time. So, yeah, she got off the bike. I think it was about 5 or 6 minutes ahead of Fenella, and Fenella ended up with a 3:03 marathon to get the win by 3 minutes over Lisa. And then Lottie Wilms was in third with a 3:10 marathon. Yet again, the ladies keeping it interesting all the way to the end.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal race. I just think for Lisa, her career has spanned a long time now, and the things she's achieved, I've put out the feelers to try and actually get her contact to get her on the show for next time round, because just sort of done it all in the sport and still going strong and to still have that passion is very admirable.
It'd be something very interesting to find out how she stays mentally on top for such an extended period.
Yeah. Yep.
Does anyone know what happened with Els Visa? Because that Fenella and her gotten that sprint finish the weekend before, and then Els was fourth, and probably she'd say she had a bad day, but Fenella had a fantastic day. So that's strange. I don't know who backs it up. Well, they're both European, both raced a lot.
It's probably something that we actually talked about the week before that race in terms of racing the week before. It can be good, can be bad with the travel. The difference is Fenella swims really well, and so she would have swam through a lot of the pro men, and so would have been in with some of, I'm not saying like, but to have company on the bike, right? Where Els swam a 1:02 high, so she came through town the first lap and was really riding hard, but she was totally on her own. So I feel like having company can be make the day a lot more enjoyable. And yeah, it might just be a case that she raced so hard that she spewed over the line in Challenge Canberra. It may have been a bit too taxing to go and do it again the next week.
Definitely a very deep effort from Els. So you can't, like, there's the emotional toll of that as much as the physical. We saw, just back onto the how fast the bike was, the wind was a little bit different to usual. Is that, that's right, isn't it, Clint? And I think people think a headwind and tailwind is a bad thing, but it tends to actually equal much faster times than a crosswind. Because with a crosswind, you're sort of working against it the whole time, and it really does lower your power because you're putting a lot more energy through the upper body and stabilizing your front wheel. Head and tail, you do get it. Whatever you're losing on the head, you sort of get back with the tail. And the way people are dialed in now, like Lisa's position looks phenomenal. It like across the board, just spectacular bike times. And the roads over here are not that quick. We don't have the motorcade like a lot of European races. So it was just some dead set fast riding and fast wind conditions, but not particularly fast roads. So I just think the level continued to go up, a bit of luck with the wind, but far out, people were flying on the bike.
I think a special mention to the first age group or two. His performance was like very comparable to Dan Plew's result in California, because obviously he had a bit tight assisted swim or current assisted swim in California. But Alex Stewart, 57 swim, a 416 bike, and a 250 run. That was amazing.
He only trained 8 weeks leading into this as well. He'd been doing shit all, and he's an SAS apparently. I just can't believe it. It's unbelievable that he could not hardly train and then do that.
8'10" as an age group.
Everyone's definition of hardly train is different. Yeah. So Steve will do about 20 hours a week in his off season and be blowing up that he hasn't done anything. No, you're going to do a proper off season, aren't you, Steve? Yeah.
On to the men's side of things. Obviously, Daniel got the win. Birdo had a really good day in second, and then Nick Thompson in third. Would love to give some love to Nick. He got off the bike. Well, he got out of the water actually for the first lap, right? And Reedy and I were standing there and were just amazed how hard he seemed to be working. He rode out on the bike, seemed to be working very, very hard. He got off the bike, was limping because he was cramping. And I would have bet my house that he was going to be walking half that marathon. And I would have lost my house because he toughed it out for a 250 marathon. So that was so impressive.
Yeah, I have a whole new level of respect for Nick as well. I said to you, even when he did the little Aussie exit in the swim, he was red and he was sprinting because I knew he would have been frustrated with where he was at with the swim. He's just sprinting and I'm like, oh, I remember making those mistakes. That's going to be a long day. And then he just pulled it off. So, yeah, it was good. We are recording. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Oh, do we not have the pleasure of video?
Yeah, just a sec. I just had to take a dump, so I'm way back.
Can't not have you on camera, Daniel. Oh, you're so good looking.
And this is we didn't mean to do this, Daniel, but we've got Matt Burton joining us exactly at the same time. It's just been a bit of a conflict, but you guys can. We'll just talk about all the same
then
things.
Then I'm not going to be on this show. I'm sorry, guys.
you won't stay on because you'll be the second most beautiful human on the podcast today. Is that right?
Yeah, I can't handle that. My ego will take a hit now.
You guys in the same place?
Yeah. Are you guys out running together?
Just in the forest. congratulations, Daniel. I've got to admit, when you won Canberra, I was like, oh shit, he's maybe cooked his legs for Busso. And then you went and proved me wrong. And I was saying to Clint, it's almost a different era now with, you know, potentially the shoes make a big difference. People recover quite well. But were you confident that you could pull off, you know, a 70.3 and then that would help with the Ironman? Or were you a bit, was there a part of you that was a little bit worried?
I think there's a lot of different, obviously there's a lot of different aspects to it. Obviously, like one of the main reasons why I came to Canberra and decided to race that one was, partly because I haven't raced since Singapore, and I know I'm kind of a guy who needs a bit of racing to actually do well. Then there's also the financial aspect of it. It's not cheap for me to actually go to Australia and race. Also, I needed some crew here, and you know, it costs a lot of money. So I was fortunate enough to be paid by Canberra to come and also both promote and also race the race. So, you know, that played into that. That was actually the major part of the decision of going to Canberra. Speaking of like fatigue and stuff like that, obviously the shoes helps a lot. But I think actually from hearing from a lot of guys, who've been on the scene for many years, I think, to be honest, it just comes down to smarter training and like better decisions in terms of recovery and focus on, like, I'm pretty certain that the amount of training I do on a weekly basis and the fatigue I kind of carry from week to week is quite the same, to be honest. You know, having those like 30 to 34 hours of training consistently is obviously that plays a huge part in being able to recover well. And it didn't really cross my mind that, you know, I wouldn't be able to recover fast enough for Western Australia. But then I was there laying on the ground after a crash in Canberra, and I thought, like, oh shit, that was the exact thing that was not supposed to happen. And in race week, I also had a bit of problems with ribs and a sore body. So obviously, racing. Stuff can happen. You don't really like can foresee or see from the future but I think it didn't really cross my mind before that the fatigue would be high enough for me not to be able to race in a perfect race in Canberra. And 100% the super shoes helps a lot. Like I can do threshold sessions 3 times a week and not really have any problems with my lower legs or anything. And you, no way in hell you would be able to do that just like 6 years ago.
Daniel, because I know Berto's in a bit of a hurry, I'm just going to ask him a few questions, and then if you don't mind, I'll jump back to you. But Berto,
yeah,
Berto, congratulations. Like, a result that we all knew you were capable of, but it'd been a while between, you know, awesome races, and a bit of a relief, I'm guessing, towards the end of the year, especially with a new bike sponsor and other things, and obviously being a dad now as well.
Can you? Yeah, thanks. Can you hear me?
Yeah, got you.
Yeah, sweet. It's a relief. I mean, I don't want to set a precedence where I'm only good at home, but it's always got to be a place I got to start being all right. Start of the year was terrible. I was trying to race with niggles, and I'm not, you know, when you're mid-30s, you're not bouncing up as quickly, or you can't sort of flush it out as fast. You actually have to take some time and give some care to it. But, mid-year in Singapore, you know, a lot of us got belted around, but I just seemed to bring home everything that Singapore had to offer. So I had a parasite that was misdiagnosed by two hospitals. I don't think I've ever been that sick to the point where, like, my wife was actually worried, which is, you know what it's like, boys. It's not too common that your wife gets worried about when you're whinging about fatigue all the time. So, it just made me address my health a bit more, a lot more, actually, in terms of, that same thing. You're not 21. So if I'm going to try and line up and race well, like, to go to Busso now and win the race, I figured you had to break the course record, and I did it, but we just got spanked. That's all.
So Berto, you were known as a really high volume trainer, and Daniel touched on the amount of load he can get through as well. Now that you're a dad, and I remember for me, I used to always just be so jealous sometimes of the managing kids and no sleep and everything else. Have you had to adjust that volume that you've been able to do?
I probably carried my biggest volume period ever, just from once I got healthy. It was all coming to me a lot nicer. I was probably 2 months at 160 hours for the month. So for me, I was really happy how I was moving, but I still see my son on Mondays. I actually look after him. That's my rest day, sort of. It's not really, hey, they, when they're at two, Steve, you know, there's nothing about rest. I'm extremely lucky. My mum and dad are close by. We've actually, with property prices and stuff in Perth at the moment, we've moved back in with my mother-in-law mid-year. So she's been fantastic. We essentially have a live-in nanny, right, when I need to shoot for small sessions. And then, he heads to his other pop as well, who wants to hang out with him. So it's Kim and I are lucky that Tom's such a good sleeper as well. I don't know if we'll have another one. He sleeps 12 hours a night. So, I kind of adjusted, but I honestly felt like there was a period in the training where I wasn't home. Like, I was leaving home because we're living up the hill in Perth now. So pools and stuff are sort of towards town. I would leave home at 5 a.m. and I'd come home at 6:30 or 7. Like, I take everything with me for the day, I got really good at packing lunches, and it's like being back at school again.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying I want to go there all the time, but I felt like I needed to get back to that point in training load to set myself up for Busso and the next year.
How long were you out of action post Singapore, Berto? Yeah. And do you think that when you actually got going again, there was a new, like, you were so fresh from being out of action for so long that it played into like a really good prep into Busselton?
Yeah, I was bedridden for a week. I heard Daniel say about he couldn't walk. It was unbelievable. Like, I'd never sat on the toilet so much in my life. And then the next week took me a while just for energy level's sake. And then I tried to get into sort of a couple of 30-hour weeks, and it was really difficult. So it wasn't till probably a month where I cracked through to start to feel a bit normal again. And then I met with a bloke that's been helping me now through to Busso. I've always sort of been self-coached. Tyler Butterfield helped me early in the year, but I just wanted to understand the science a bit more and what I was trying to put myself through at a bit of an older age. And he was like, "Oh, mate, you might struggle to pick yourself up for Busso to go what you need to go." And I was like, "Yeah, you know, we've all got that ego too, right? Where it's like, yeah, I'll be right. I'll find my feet. You know, there's plenty of time." Like, when you're putting those hours in a week, 1 week is a lot of work. You can turn things around really quickly if you can be super consistent. And then the decision to go to Melbourne, look, it's well known that a flat, fast half is not something that maybe tailors to me, but race conditioning is so important. And that's, you know, talking about Challenge Canberra, I'm a big advocate for that style of it. I think you really harden yourself physically and mentally when you race. But I had to carry quite a bit of training load through Melbourne. So that's why I was coming home. I was super positive how that went, because I haven't contested a half in maybe ever, really.
Berto, I ran past you at Melbourne towards the end of the half marathon, and when I saw your calves, I said that's the first time I've ever seen definition on Berto's calves, and he's gonna win Busso.
So it is mid-year. When I spent a bit of time with the doctor, I've been suffering for ever. I have an autoimmune disease, stomach and back related, that caused me to hold a lot of inflammation. So, yeah, it's been understanding that and going through, you know, the right medication to make sure. So essentially all the years of back issue is due to this. My spine's been trying to fuse itself. But, you know, the doctor was sort of like, "Oh, wow, like, yeah, you're in trouble." And I was like, "No, I feel great. Like, what is the process?" And that's where the addressing health is, you know, it's hard, because I wouldn't have gone and investigated it had Singapore not broken me. So thanks to the PTO.
conscious that you're almost out of time. Daniel, too, right. This is a question for both of you. We sort of do a little bit of a chat about, you know, where you're at with your racing, but then we just talk about a few different topics. And Daniel, we can 100% edit out anything you want at the end, because we're going to play a few different games. But to start with, question that we're wondering, let's say you had unlimited funding, unlimited money. What would you do to create, to make triathlon way more spectator friendly, or just turn it into a super sport that everyone wanted to watch? I've got my own ideas on this, but I want to throw it to you guys first. Berto, do you want to kick it off, and then Daniel can have a think, because it looks like he's pondering.
Yeah, I think there's a few people in the sport at the moment trying to do this, right? And those budgets seem to run out. So if you had an endless surplus. I mean, TV media is where it goes to, right, in terms of if you can get a mainstream audience, but the sport's too long. But unfortunately, I reckon, and it's like cycling, you need to create like almost get guys to buy into one another's sort of optimism or their goals in a race. So it's like, come on, mate, like the French want to go up the road because it's Bastille Day, right? You know, you got to make – so then the team sort of allow that to happen and create the sort of allow the race to narrate itself.
Mm.
And I think – I don't know. It's not that we all need to be super good friends and give one another a couple of thousand to go up the road, but it to make it bigger and more spectator friendly, we need to, yeah, the egos need to come through in a nice way where we're actually putting on a show for people. Otherwise, we all seem crazy. You speak to a normal person and they're like, oh, no, it's not normal, right? Like, it's just for... You're a psycho. Like, you know, I've been fortunate in this last period to work with a bloke, and they just don't quite understand. And oh, mate, I you could have this conversation all day long. I, you know, you would have some great ideas ready. You really pick the sport apart well.
I've always if I was actually really just ignoring the traditions of the sport and just going to make it spectator friendly, I've always thought you've got to include some sort of cliff jumping in the swim. So run through, seriously high cliff jump. And then on the bike, road bikes only and paintball guns. So you can take people out. No, I'm serious. Paintball guns. And then on the run, any sort of contact is allowed except for striking. So you just, it's like full grappling. You can jujitsu people out. Yeah, exactly.
And you should be able to gamble as well. Yeah, if we can put it on TV and gamble on it, everyone's going to want to watch it. I'll watch it if I got money on Daniel to win. I would have loaded up on Daniel, and I would have been watching every minute of it, going shit. McKenna looks close. Oh wait, he's shit.
Well, the three pros that are on this, Steve, if there was full body contact, you are in a world of hurt.
I'm really dirty.
I mean, Daniel's run was entertaining, but imagine if Steve's running the other way and just takes him out. Like,
can I ask a question about your tactics? Because you kind of put it out there that you'd go hard at the start, and it was very wise because we're all sitting there prepared for something, doing, you know, the work for the first 60K, and then you're just coming through and exploding through. So I think, congratulations on the tactics and being better than everyone in the race as well. So you just won on both sides there and made it 100% you're going to win. So it makes us all think that we need to be a bit wiser in the lead up and think about it all a bit more.
I think, to be honest, it was only because I did not really think I was in shape to do an Ironman. So I was sitting there before the race actually thinking, okay, I have to do some trash talking before and kind of lead people into thinking that I'll do certain things.
You did well.
I love
so that was also the reason why I put up the 230 marathon picture, because I thought, like, then they think I'm in really good run shape, and I am in good run shape. But I'm not in 230. I'm not in 230 shape.
A 237 run is still in pretty good shape, mate.
Yeah. And I did not at all think I would be able to run that. So I'm stoked for the race. Like, I'm actually really, really proud on how I handled the situations there. But, you know, sometimes also you also have to, I don't know. Do a bit of talking before to stir things up.
Oh, it made it a good. Lot more fun, and
but it was also as Berto said, like, being in bed and not being able to train for 4 weeks due to Singapore sickness. You know, you can go to a race like this and feel great, but it's still a 7.5 hour workday, and you know. you can feel great the first 7 hours, but that's the last half hour you can just explode completely. And that was, to be honest, that was what I was most afraid of, because I've not been able to put those like big blocks of training in before the race. So that makes you think, you know, before the race, how can I do this well? And to be honest, on the bike, I was also like, I put in a couple of searches and I thought, oh shit, man, this is gonna bite me in the ass when I come off the bike. And also why I tried to put on some, I'm not sure if it actually worked on you, Matt, but I saw the first 40K or so you pulled in like 1:20 or so. Mm-hmm. And that was when I also thought, okay, if I put in a search now and he can see I'm in the front and I overpace it a little bit and take back 1 minute, they will maybe not be as eager to get up the road as they were before. Because I thought you also had spotters out there. So that whole mindset of racing was actually, it was really fun to do. And also because I was scared as fuck, to be honest.
Daniel, talking of sort of speaking a bit of shit, Australians are known for sort of just some pretty slang gibberish terms that not many people from overseas understand. And so we've got a bit of a segment here where I want you to let me know if you can decipher what this Australian slang term is. We will kick it off with, yeah, you don't have to think about it too much. Just, you don't know, but you can also just have a guess. So first one to kick it off. If an Australian starts the sentence with "yeah nah," do they mean yes or do they mean nah?
Nah.
Yeah, correct. Well done. You've obviously been here.
I was going to say yeah.
Oh, really? But you're from Adelaide, and no one speaks. Yeah.
We don't talk like this.
Where?
Okay. If second one, and then I'll let Steve have a crack. If someone says something is a piece of piss, what do they mean?
Oh, Steve first.
No. I mean, Steve's got questions. You're the only one who can answer this.
Okay.
We know, mate. We say it.
Like, really bad. Really bad. It must be.
Nah, that means it's really easy. So not a bad attempt.
Like you won Busselton Ironman piece of piss.
Right. that was just the front cover.
Steve, have you got any?
I've actually only got ones that Reedy sent to me, because as I told you, we speak properly down here in Adelaide. What does up himself mean?
If someone is up themselves,
he's extremely arrogant, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
Okay, well, he was talking about himself.
I heard that a lot in the last couple of weeks.
if someone came up to you and said, "A Sheila asked me for me digits at the local watering hole," what does it mean?
Oh, well.
Do you want it again? A Sheila asked me for me digits at the local watering hole.
It must be you've been down at the pub with the boys and a girl came up to you and asked for your phone number.
Yes.
Well done. Yeah. Amazing. This guy is a good cunt.
So what about we're not here to fuck spiders. What would that be referring to?
let's get our shit together.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Far out. He's more Aussie than me.
Adelaide. Again, Adelaide.
That doesn't come as a surprise to you.
If someone was riding their bike flat out like a cut snake, what would they be doing?
There must be. Is that a term of Birdo? Or,
it would have worked well for Birdo on the weekend. Yeah. Yeah.
just going flat out.
Yeah, exactly.
Write it like you stole it.
Yeah exactly. Any others?
Chakasiki?
That's... What was it, Steve?
Chakasiki.
Nothing.
is that a cocktail or something?
No, it's someone calling in sick for work.
Ah, Yeah, I'll go for
it. You've done really well, mate.
That was probably Scott Steinberg on in the front pack.
Yeah, he chucked a cig. He did, didn't he? Do you know
the Steinenbergen? Do you know him?
No.
He's like the annoying little brother. Because that was how I felt out there. I was kind of responsible for him at the same time. I was really annoyed at him.
I thought he was French. I didn't know who he was. I just had a go at him either.
He's Danish.
Danish. Yeah.
But he's a good guy. Don't be too hard on him.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He was naughty on Sunday, but I'll give him a break.
Yeah. Birdo, have you got a fly?
What have I got, man? I'm only 10 minutes from where I need to be, so I got a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so you have it's been a long relationship with Giant. You got a new bike sponsor. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I one of the stores here actually mid-year. So Giant has been 15 years, and I've loved every second of it, and I went through a lot of different injuries, which plenty of people do, but you know, the bike, the loyalty I wanted to show to the brand was more so to people sort of say, oh, maybe it's the bike that doesn't work for you, but I always believed it was fine. All good things come to an end. So it's not like I'm definitely not leaving on bad terms, but Cervelo, I'll be riding Cervelo into the new year, which is quite daunting. Like, it's just actually organizing bikes and then obviously the setup at the moment, but when you go and ride quite fast in a race and then you're gonna pack that up, it's like I don't know, the last few nights it's almost kept me up a little bit because I'm thinking about what I got to get gear wise and go to 12 speed. I'm actually on a 7-year-old group set, so it's the first group set I got with the Trinity, this current Trinity. So yeah, my crank's got a crack in it and everything. So hopefully I'll be able to claim that on the Shimano callback. But yeah, I've been riding the S5, the road bike. So I rode the Giant TCR for 15 years. And I've been so impressed by, you know, obviously the your number one team in the world tour riding the bike, but the suppleness and the stiffness uphill is what impressed me most because it's a very aero road bike, but I honestly feel like when I ride it, I'm riding my TT bike. So, Steve, I know you know what a P5 feels like, mate, but for me, disc brakes will be nice. I found, like, riding with Nick on the weekend, he also had a P5, which I started just to get a bit envious, but going through corners, I have to brake with rim brake and the braking. The spring-loaded brakes on the Trinity aren't fantastic. So I have to brake quite early if I need to pull up into a corner or something. Whereas, you know, disc brake, the luxury is you can literally drop it in the last 10 metres around the corner and away you go. So, you know, that sort of stuff excites me because I like to get a bit loose on the bike sometimes. But, you know, and then I see Daniel set up and I'm like, well, you know, maybe I should reach out to them. But,
Exciting, wait till next year, mate.
Yeah.
Have you got a new bike coming, Daniel?
little teaser.
The cockpit, yeah. That's exciting, but it's nice to, it was really sweet for me to finish. I've actually rode for sub 4 hours in training down there. So it was really nice to do it when I needed to do it to a degree. It sounds odd to say this, but it's probably the worst I felt I rode in Busso in the 9 times I've started there. Nick Thompson kept it pretty honest, but we also went through lap one in 157 high, and I actually only broke 2 hours for the first time in Melbourne the other week. So we went out of town and I rode up next to him. I'm like, mate, we need to relax. Like, we're not winning the race in this first 90. And then, like, seeing Daniel, he played it so well. If I could swim with the front pack, he played the race. When I saw them out and he was sort of off the back on that first sort of few segments, I was like, gee, that's smart. And then I got worried as soon as that gap went the other way. I was like, well, we're going to have to hold real patient here, because then Nick, that youthfulness of Nick is like, yeah, I'm feeling good. Let's get stuck in. But then I found, you know, fitness kicks in eventually, and But yeah, it was super enjoyable ride by the end. I really struggled through a lot of the start of it. But then you go and ride that time and it's obviously the bike's very fast and it's, then I'm going to rack it up on the wall. And I actually had it custom painted because I want to keep it to show Tom one day what bikes used to look like. So yeah, that's, it's not going anywhere. I've had a few people try and buy it off me since the weekend.
Well, you're on UCI legal. You'll be on UCI legal next year with the Cervelo, so you'll probably have to expect to go as slow as me.
Yeah.
we'll see how fast you'll make them. Pretty fast, I reckon.
Yeah, I'll make some changes to it, no doubt. Probably too many changes. And that's the thing, right? You get a new bike, and then you just early on with the Trinity, I had to like, I was taking tools out on the road all the time, and you know, I got mates that do the same thing, but it's such a bad habit to any age group are listening, don't take tools and change your saddle angle and height when you're out on the road training.
Look at Reedy giggling.
That was my way to relax pre-race, just change the whole position.
Right. Graham O'Brien didn't help that, right? It used to go to the Worlds and just take the bike out of the box and be like, oh, yeah, that looks good. Yeah. And then, you know, it's the game's changed a little bit now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Matt, how much like error testing and stuff like that are you doing? Is that something you are big on, or
mate? You've seen Perth. It's about the size of Busso. So I have been over to Melbourne. So the guy that develops those ride sync develops those bars. I have been on the velodrome a few times, but it'll actually be a fair bit more now. It interests me. It's just we're quite isolated here, so. Yeah, I've been fortunate.
It's funny because the Australian track team is quite big, and yeah. It seems like you have a rich history in that terms, and they must be huge on aerodynamics. So that's also, like, I thought it would be kind of a no-brainer for basically all the Australians to go through track testing because, like, obviously in Denmark we have the same, and we look towards other sports and how they are doing stuff. So I thought that would be the same down here.
They're actually building a wind tunnel in South Australia at the moment, which what? Is, yeah, there you go, Steve. That's
okay.
At Sassy. So, yeah, I know that's in operation. I'm just fortunate I've had a few mates that ride with some World Tour teams, and I get some really good knowledge off them whenever they go in, you know, and Durbo, he's been on Giant now for a few years. So I guess I was able to adapt a couple of things, which I liked what he was doing. So
for both you guys, can you say what your CDA is, or you don't want to share, or you don't know better?
I don't know. No, okay. I don't know.
Daniel, do you know yours?
Just below 0.2.
Oh, yeah, well. Dooley.
So, yeah, right. Daniel, is there?
But then again, that's I'm not sure that's not a position I would be able to hold for 90. Or I would be able to hold the position, but it's all about like tucking your head, like. In the perfect position and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where it like, it's not really.
It's so taxing.
Yeah.
Unless you can ride a race in that position, it doesn't really matter, to be honest. Obviously you need the perfect position, but it's all about the training you do in that position. It's not about what you, like the perfect lap you did on a track or in the wind tunnel and so on. So I think that's also what a lot of people have to understand, that we, especially as triathlete, we have to adapt a lot into ways of testing and ways on analyzing those numbers we get out of the testing.
Is there a big difference, Daniel, between an aero tunnel and doing it on the velodrome? Is one much more accurate than the other?
For different stuff, for different kind of testing, it's the two are perfect, but for different stuff and for different kind of testing. And you know, there's some testing I'd any day use the wind tunnel for, but the problem is it's very expensive, and it's also like you obviously you have to. Like book the time slots for like a half year out or so, where the velodrome can be a little bit more accessible. So that's also why, I mean, you need, you know, you can test different stuff on in different ways. But you also, it's the same with power numbers. You always have to be, like careful comparing stuff, and you don't have the same power meter. You don't have the same test day. You don't like, even I can have one day with two, like 0.22, and then the next day I can go 0.19. Like it's in CDA, it's you can't really compare it a lot.
Just an extra long nasal hair setting off the. Hey, Clint's got one. Well, thanks heaps, Berto. We'll let you go to your appointment,
thank you,
mate. And congrats on such a good race. It's awesome to see you back,
well done, Berto.
Back flying, and especially as a dad, I always root for people that are dealing with a kid at home or more kids. So good on you. And Clint, I think you had another question for Daniel. I can't even remember what it was, but
well, before WA,
hey boys.
Before WA and before Canberra, your vlogs were you were pretty vocal, which was really good. So it got me thinking, hypothetically, if you could come down to the last kilometer in Hawaii, you're shoulder to shoulder like Macca and Ray Lert, who would be the one person you would choose to outkick for the win and just tear their heart out? That's a good ponder.
No, you don't have to you don't have to tear their heart out. You could just sort of mildly break their heart.
obviously we have I would love to do it with Magnus. That's not because I want to tear his heart out, that's because I think that could be the most epic finish ever for the both of us, because like, I think he's probably the guy I respect the most out of all of my competitors. And, you know, he's a really good guy, and I enjoy spending time with him. And that's also why that would be awesome for the two of us. And I think also for the sport. Then obviously also the Norwegians, because they have dominated the last couple of years. And obviously that would be nice to show Christian that it actually hurts more to lose. He have to try it at some point. That's difficult.
I don't believe any of that. You hear that, Magnus? Daniel hates you. He's going to rip your heart out.
He will take great pleasure in ripping your heart out along a Leahy Drive.
Hey, we really appreciate you taking the time, Daniel. And how long are you in Australia for?
I have a week more. Actually heading down to Denmark today, down to Western Australia or Southwest. We've had a couple of days enjoying some nice wineries and some good food down here. And it's, I think the whole Australian vibe just suits me in some ways better than the European, actually, because it's way more chilled. I think that was also why I did some banter and going into the race, because I felt like the guys could actually take it and wouldn't be mad about it. And that was actually cool for once.
Will we see you down here next year at any point? Maybe June?
I can't in June. Unfortunately, I would love to race Ken, but next year I can't.
Beautiful. Well, that's good for our guys. So
yeah, you can you can fist me again at another time. like you promised pre-race. You did. You inserted it.
I'll not elaborate anything on that one.
We appreciate it so much for coming on, and we've taken up enough of your time, so thanks so much for coming on, and congrats again. Like, an absolutely phenomenal performance, and we really hope, you know, now that we know you, we hope that you take that performance to world champs and break Magnus's heart.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. It was a pleasure being on. And seriously, I've loved racing down here, especially at WA. That was it was really special for me as well to actually feel the love and the support from the Australian crowd. And it's not the last time you've seen me down here. That's 100% sure. I'll see you.
Awesome, thanks, good one. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dan. Cheers.
See ya. Go.
So now we are going to roll to the other, not the other end of the spectrum. I don't mean to discredit you, Shorty, but
come on, mate. Let's be honest on the spectrum of things. It's the other end.
we did want to talk. I'll introduce you first. Pete Short has been a friend for a while, and actually we were at a wedding, and Shorty said to me, mate, I had a few drinks with a friend and I've made a huge mistake. I'm like, oh no, what have you done? Was it a female friend? Is she pregnant? What's going on? And he said, no, it was a male friend. We've both signed up for Ironman WA. And I think you said, I haven't done a single bit of training in 8 years. And I was like, that's all right. Cool. Like, how much time have you got to train? And he was like, yeah, not much. So Shorty, talk to me. What's your role with work? What was the main driver behind, sorry, for everyone listening, just when I said the other end of the spectrum, we're talking to an age grouper who really didn't just managed an amazing turnaround in health and fitness in a very short amount of time, and someone that talked me into coaching him with a lot of persistence. So tell everyone sort of what drove you to giving Ironman another crack, and then I can even talk a bit about how hectic your schedule was and how amazing it was to do what you did.
Yeah, sure thing, Rudy. I guess background, I did a bunch of Ironman racing back in the late 2000s. And I think my last race was 2014. So it was about 9.5 years ago. It was in Cairns. Life gets in the way. I stopped training for a while. And then I got struck with an autoimmune disease in 2020. And it was a pretty chronic one. It was a spondylitis-based one. So your immune system is essentially attacking your own joints. And it really sort of took me down pretty hard. Couldn't walk, couldn't use my legs much. Yeah, had to go through a couple of years of medication, sort of relearn how to walk without a limp and sort of get rid of some of the muscle atrophy and things like that. And then I sort of accepted my fate that maybe, you know, doing any athletic stuff was kind of out of my scope going forward. Anyway, so I got through that, and then as Reedy said, went out for a few sake bombs, and like all great race registrations, had a couple of drinks and decided that maybe a comeback, and I wanted to go out on my own terms doing an Ironman as well, knowing that I had spent a lot of years on the sidelines. And so I think the words I used, Reedy, at that wedding that you referred to was, I need someone to save me from myself. Because I knew that I was going to have to kind of approach this in a very diligent fashion. I'm 48 and a half years old. I'm no longer in my late 30s. I'm approaching 50. The body's not what it was anyway, regardless of age. So that's kind of the background. Why I wanted to do it kind of unfolded in a few ways. I think one, I never sort of got to choose my last Ironman race. So I was pretty keen to kind of do that, knowing that it was, and sort of race with a level of gratitude and an approach that I hadn't used in previous years. So that was probably the driving factor, you know, behind it. And yeah, to your point, had very limited time. You know, I work for a big multinational tech company. I do middle of the night conference calls regularly during the week. You can probably comment more on my schedule, but it was a bit of a juggle, to be honest. So.
Yeah, so when we started, Shorty sent across his schedule, and keeping in mind, I coach some, you know, some young age groupers wanting to be pro who might work a couple of shifts a week, or, you know, I'll even, I won't actually throw a name in there, but, or some of them, you know, sometimes you coach a pro, and I remember maybe even getting like this myself in some of my easier years, but, you know, where they have a 3 or 4 hour commitment and then think they can't train that day or whatever it is. But Shorty's schedule was pretty much, hey, I've got from like 4 till 5 a.m. today and then another hour from 9 till 10 p.m. Just those sort of crazy scheduling. I think it was like we were 4 or 5 weeks in, and I'm like, Shorty, like I can work with a fair bit, but I can't work with this. you're gonna have to take some leave, or at least get some days to do some longer days. So we did sort of prepare your base early on with just it was not a lot of training, 6 to 7 hours a week, I think, early on. And then thankfully you took some leave days and were able to get a long day in sort of once a week. But The biggest challenge early on, I remember we started and you said, oh, look, all my heart rate zones are really high. And we realized that they're actually not. You just never really worked your zone two range very well. You're just happy gray zoning everything. But the change in fitness over how long was the whole prep?
It was about 6.5 months. And yeah, I'd never used heart rate, right? Back in the day, I just go out and flog myself every day and then I'm at a race and hope for the best.
Yeah.
It was a different approach.
And pretty soon learned that your heart rate range was actually pretty much normal. I would say from the beginning, you were running, 6 minute K pace for for your zone two heart rate. And by the end, you were sort of ticking along at 4:30s. So an absolutely phenomenal change. Talk to me about how did you work it with Sarah, your wife? These things take a big sacrifice from everyone. You do have two young kids as well as older kids as well. So just talk to me about, I think age groupers need to understand that if you're going to go into something like this and you don't want a divorce, it's got to be a mutual decision and mutual arrangement.
Oh, mate, 100%. So after said race registration, I remember talking to Sarah on the Sunday. I had a little bit of a hangover. and I kind of said, look, I've signed up for this thing. I think it's probably a good thing that I'd go through with it. And she kind of pondered it for a while. I think it was the Tuesday at work. I get this iMessage that pops through. Hey, babe, I just dug your old bike out of the back of the shed, wiped the cobwebs off and put air in your tires. So I thought, oh, you beauty, she's on board. So, I think to your point, Brady, it's super important, right? Like it takes a lot of commitment and consistency and effort from not just yourself, but everyone around you that needs time from you. So I had that discussion with Sarah up front. I think you might have even had it with her at some point as well. But no, she was super supportive. But even with that, I think I was prepared to sacrifice, some of my own sleep and some other things so that I could kind of do it and not take away from the family too much. Those, big Fridays that I did in that last 5-6 week block, I sort of took annual leave days to do it versus doing it on the weekend, some of those things. So I think for me, consistency and commitment was really important to get right for being able to turn up in Busselton and have an okay day out, right, for someone at my level. And there's no way I would have been able to do that without Sarah and the support of the family around me. So hugely critical. I don't think you could undergo that, even with the limited time that I had, without having that level of kind of family commitment to the cause as well.
Well, it's probably even more so important there, Shorty, because you're such a busy man that like that little time that you have to spend with the family, you're like, got to train. So as long as, I guess, I always say to the guys you coach, as long as you're open, like you talk to your partner about it and they are on board, it's okay. But as soon as you don't discuss it, that's when the wheels seem to fall off. So it's really good that you had those chats early on.
100%, Clint. And you got to recalibrate a little bit too as training load builds, because you kind of, right up to the Penrith half, as Reggie said, we were managing a pretty sort of manageable schedule. But once, we both realized that we needed to kind of ramp it. And so I think you have to constantly calibrate along the way and keep that communication going.
Yeah.
I put everything in the calendar, had everything laid out 2 weeks in advance at all times. We had to juggle a little bit, of course, sometimes daily, but mostly weekly. But yeah, recalibration and just keeping that communication open was really key. And then you get to enjoy it, right, at the finish line with those folks that have surrounded you and supported you through that process.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Did this sort of training make your the health issues that you did have any worse? Like it's obviously a lot of training for someone with anything going on.
Yeah, no, it didn't actually, Slaven. It was so my autoimmune is managed with medication now, so that's kind of all under control. I think the training, and it really touched on it, like having like more zone two low heart rate training, like I just never really thought about that before. And so seeing my fitness and strength come back to me without punishing myself was like quite a unique experience. So I was just super appreciative of that different approach, and it kind of worked.
It's something that a lot of like time restricted people do. If like they think, oh, I've got 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go and smash myself for 40 minutes. Yeah. Or like I've got that one session this weekend. I've got to finish it completely ruined. And it just doesn't work. So it's good to hear that. And it's good for others to hear that too.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, I sort of always talk to my athletes that are finishing an Ironman and sort of warn them of the post-race depression that might come on. I mean, I say depression, but typically it's less than a week. But how are you feeling now? Like, obviously the body's probably still a bit ginger, but how's the head and the mind after, you know, working towards something for so long? Obviously there's the physical and mental exhaustion of putting yourself through it, but how does it compare to previous races and or are you coping all right now?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. It's not are you okay day, is it? I think it's a really big one. And no, I'm actually doing all right. You know, I kind of had a good mental attitude going into it. And you know, you never say never. Like if I get to win the lotto and retire, or you know, all of a sudden discover all this time in my life, maybe I'd rethink it. But for now, like that was my last race, and so I think the emotional piece, really, like as well as the adrenaline, endorphins and dopamine and all the other stuff that kind of floods your body in the build-up and right at that event, and then all of a sudden post days afterwards you don't have that anymore. I've definitely felt that. Like I've definitely felt my body kind of change with those changing hormones. But mentally I'm just like super appreciative and grateful that I got to do what I got to do. And yeah, going in with that mindset, and my experience at Busso, my 23-year-old son surprised me the night before the race by arriving on plane, train and bus. And so he rocked up at our place in Busso the night before. He was, I think, 5 years old when he saw me do my first Ironman. So he's, you know, 23 now. So I had that happen. You and I spoke before the race and I had attitude of gratitude written in massive, big, bold writing on my left hand. And I looked at that constantly through the day. And then I had last 20K written on my right hand, right? And I forced myself not to look at it too much. I just sort of focus on the gratitude, but knowing that I had to set up that last 20K. So when I got to that 20K mark, and it's a weird thing, bit of a circle here, but as I got to the last couple of K, Adam, my son, runs up next to me and goes, "Hey, Dad, you're tracking to finish 1 minute past 10 hours, just in case you've got anything left to give." And I was kind of all in at that point, but yeah, at that point I thought, you know, screw it, this is my last Ironman. I'm going to go absolutely, you know, boards down right now, and managed to get a couple of sub fours in at the end just to kind of close it out, sub 10 hours, which 15 years ago, age 33, I did my first ever sub 10 at Busso.
Yeah,
wow. How cool was that?
Pretty much on the same bike too. So we can't say that it was an improvement in equipment either. Yeah. It's actually the same. It's using the same shit.
It's the same stuff, right? So that was kind of there were lots of like serendipitous moments. So, and I think that's why, to answer your question, my mental state has actually been pretty good.
Yeah.
Afterwards, I wasn't deflated because I didn't, you know, break 9 hours or qualify for Kona. I just had a different mindset. So yeah, I'm doing all right. Thanks, mate. Thanks for asking.
I think when you go into the events with, we all know it's going to hurt, right? At some point, and if you into it,
that's why you go into it.
Yeah, but you go in knowing why you're willing to let it hurt, or why you've signed up, or the bigger picture. It does make it a lot more enjoyable towards the end, and it also makes it easier to just embrace that pain and just go, "I'm here because of this," and you end up coming away from it with a lot better experience.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that last couple of Ks, unless Adam had run up next to me and told me, I don't think I would have, you know, really emptied that last little bit towards the end. So
watching your finish, mate, I think there was another couple of people standing there that might have been a bit teary too, enjoyed the moment.
So. Yeah, I did cry a lot. I hugged the family and just like let it all out.
Yeah. Well, you ran past and they took you through, and I was like, I can't miss him. And so I ran through, but there was a blockade. So I've gone to jump the fence and I've clipped the fence and just landed flat on my back. And everyone's like, "Oh, are you all right?" I'm like, "Out of my way." Just ran straight to the fence to try and catch you. But yeah, definitely an emotional one, knowing what went into it. And for anyone listening, you can do it if you really want to plan it out and be dedicated, because that was about as dedicated a prep as I've seen based on time restraints, young family, all that sort of stuff. So we just thought it'd be good to have you on, Shorty. First of all, just to celebrate what you did, but just to, I don't know, it sort of inspire people who are sort of wondering whether it's possible for them. So,
yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me on and listening to a bit of the story. Appreciate it.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, mate.
I'll be in touch.
All right.
See ya. So pretty much wraps it. Steve, you want to give any plugs for anything coming up? Just mention buy nerd belts or...
Yeah, yeah. We've got a really important ad coming up on the triathlon hour soon for nerd belts. So hopefully it gets some traction.
I think one thing worth mentioning, we always point out the maniacs in the sport. Simon Cochran set the Ultraman world record in Hawaii a couple of weeks ago. And I don't have splits in front of me. It was very impressive. I think he ran a 6.0, like it was under 6.10 maybe, double marathon. But yes, it's a maniac effort, crazy. But then I looked through the start line for Taupo 70.3 this weekend, who is on that list 2 weeks later after doing Ultraman, Simon Corcoran. So wish you all the best. I hope you beat everyone because you deserve it, you maniac.
That's amazing. We did some sweat testing in Busso. It was one of the main things I think that people might be surprised at is I got a lot of emails after the race saying, thanks so much. First time not cramping, first time, you know, and a lot of those people actually reduced the amount of sodium they were taking in. So it's not just about, I'm not about selling product. I'm about dialing in a better hydration and nutrition plan for you. And we go through a lot of different things, you know, whether you're going to tolerate fructose, whether you're not, if you got high sodium rates, we drop the carbs down, all these sorts of things. And I will be doing 2 days of testing over the weekend of Friday, the 15th, I'm pretty sure, and Sunday the 17th in Sydney. So if you are interested, I'm probably only going to make space for about 8 tests. So I'll be down there and have things on the Saturday, but the Friday and Sunday I'll be doing some testing. So email me at tim@rpgcoaching.com if you're keen to have a chat and have your nutrition hydration plan all dialed in for a huge 2024.
Cool. Awesome. I'll just finish off by saying thanks to you both for this year. If Reedy wasn't at races, Clint was, and you guys are pretty incredible before and after races, particularly after races. But it's just you're always offering help. I don't usually need too much pre-race, but it's cool to continually have it offered. And you are running around after your athletes constantly, so that's really cool to see. It's very much appreciated, and I'm going to send you a few I was going to make a really insensitive joke.
Just leave it.
Thanks.
I was just sending a thank you in the mail.
Yeah. Mate, it's our pleasure. It always sounds super corny, but like, mate, when you love what you're doing, you go home, and if you actually tallied up the hours, you'd be like, wow, this is stupid. But it's so enjoyable to when you know people's story, all like from Shorty all the way through to the guys who are racing for a living. When you know their story, the sacrifices, it's just the best gig ever. So no worries, we enjoy it.
Oh, thanks. It's cool to see you both very patient with my hate for the sport when I had such a love for the sport just 6 months ago. So it's come back now, I think, because of that race just now, and you both didn't really push me or you just kind of knew what to do with my hate. So you just kind of let it be, and you knew that it would pass because you know I'm a frother deep down. So thank you.
My pleasure. It's always a privilege to work with you, Steve, as much as it's a roller coaster ride as well. Everyone. Thanks for listening. And hey, we always pay ourselves out for not having any listeners, but it's actually grown to quite a big listener base. So we thank you very much for listening. We never expected to have, you know, thousands tuning in. It still shocks me when people say it at races. So we might even start putting some work into this thing.
Yeah. And we actually like,
what are we around 50,000 now? Is that
right? Yeah, give or take a little bit. But, on a serious note, we very much like, we leave the races shocked when people say to us like, hey, love the podcast. It's a bit like, yeah, it's kind of cool. So What are we going to say? What does everyone else say? Give us a like, give us a share, a follow, all that stuff.
$10,000 in sponsorship, whatever you want. All right.
Yeah. Buy a mug.
We don't even make any money on the mugs.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be mugs coming out soon. So, yeah, buy a mug.
Speaking of mugs, talk to you two later.
See you guys.